welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, March 16, 2023. A new United Nations report says children in South Sudan suffer from effects of the conflict.
Most violations, almost 50%, were perpetrated by armed groups, but the government security forces were responsible for at least one in three grave violations.
And authorities in the contested Abyei area want the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the Sudan Armed Forces out of the region.
The civilians, they want to go back, but they are fearing the existence of the army inside the town.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in the Abyei administrative area say forces from Sudan and South Sudan are still in the Abyei area after the United Nations peacekeeping mission asked them to leave the region. An official with the Abyei administrative area says the presence of the forces poses insecurity. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Abyei Administrative Area Information Minister Ajak Deng and Rau Manuel Rau, chairperson of Abyei Civil Society Organization, both tell South Sudan in Focus that South Sudan People's Defense Force soldiers have settled in Agok on the southern part of the Abyei box, while the Sudan Armed Forces have moved to Difra, one of the oil-rich areas inside the Abyei box. The officials say the presence of the two forces inside the box is against the principles governing the box. Deng says the forces pose a security threat and urgent action is needed from governments and external actors to prevent insecurity in the area.
Now they are in the box. The civilians are not able to return into their houses. Because even the administration that was in a need, because now they are occupying the head of the county and they are around the town. So the civilians, they want to go back, but they are fearing the existence of the army inside the town.
Deng says the people of Abyei want the forces to leave and be redeployed to where they are supposed to be. On Sunday, activists demonstrated peacefully in Abyei town and delivered a petition to UNESFA and COPIT, the African Union Peace and the United Nations Security Council, as well as both governments. Abyei Civil Society Organization Chair Rao says deadly violence, some of which he claims is supported by government forces, continues in the area.
Killings and looting of property, also the property including livestock, that's coming mostly from armed youth, evidently supported by some elements of SSPDF stations in Tweed County, and then the attacks from northern part by Sudanese militias, armed forces, and Syria, supported obviously by Sudanese government and army. This situation cannot be accepted by the community to continue as it is.
Rao says civilians want UN peacekeeping forces in the Abyei area to step up their efforts and to tell the governments of Sudan and South Sudan to relocate their forces outside of the Abyei box.
This is creating another tension between the two countries' armies. The moment Sudanese armed forces take one step deep inside the box, southern part, SSPDF is doing the same thing. And this can be another escalation. And we are requesting both countries to deploy their forces outside the box.
Abyei has been the scene of on and off violent attacks for months. Some of the incidents were caused by parties in the southern part of the area, while others were caused by Sudanese armed cattle herders called the Meseria. South Sudan People's Defense Force spokesperson Major General Lulroy Kwong denies the South Sudan Army has encroached on the Abyei box.
We clearly deployed our forces south of Abyei box in areas that are territories, recognized territories of the Republic of South Sudan. I'm not aware of any new encroachment, and I strongly believe we do not have any reason to encroach on an area that is contested.
Efforts to reach out to the Sudanese military spokesperson, Colonel Nabil Abdallah, for comments were unsuccessful. Daniel Andakera, the UNISFA spokesperson, confirmed to VOA that forces from South Sudan and Sudan are still present within the Abyei box, violating the 2011 agreement the two countries signed with the UN, which states that only UNISFA forces are allowed to carry arms and provide security within the Abyei box.
Abyei box should be free of arms. For any armed group, whether organized or individual, only UNISFA is allowed to carry arms for the sake of security. So the presence of any armed group is really a violation of that agreement. So the leadership of UNISFA, the force commander, the acting head of mission and force commander, is engaging Juba and Khartoum with a view of resolving this.
The Abyei box hosts at least 60,000 people, mainly from the nine chiefdoms of the Ngok Dinka. Deng says at least 50,000 residents are displaced and stay outside their homes following conflicts that have occurred in the area since early last year when suspected armed youth from Warab State attacked locals in Abyei. Both Sudan and South Sudan claim the area as their own. The international community has placed its management under the offices of the two presidents of Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A human rights law firm, Global Rights Compliance, has filed a case with the Office of the Prosecutor of the International Criminal Court in The Hague, Netherlands, requesting urgent opening of a preliminary examination into the situation in South Sudan. Kenneth Scott, an international human rights lawyer and former war crimes prosecutor in The Hague, says South Sudanese leaders are not serious about establishing a hybrid court in the country to try perpetrators of violence.
The problem is, yeah, you're absolutely right. There's been calls for a hybrid court, a regional hybrid international court for South Sudan since as far back as 2014, 2015. Former Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, the African Union's own commission of inquiry, recommended the establishment of a hybrid court. Both of the peace agreements to date, one in 2015, the second in 2018, have both promised, guaranteed, contractually committed themselves to establishing the hybrid court. Unfortunately, it has never happened. Both the South Sudan government and the African Union have, at best, dragged their feet, and nothing has really come of it. And in fact, the South Sudanese leadership, the current leadership, has come out strongly against the court. So while I would love to see the hybrid court established, there doesn't seem to be any real indications that that's going to happen, at least anytime soon.
And how about the argument from the South Sudanese leaders who kept saying that all these accusations against them is not fair because they are trying their best and they have been sending messages saying that they are implementing the peace agreement and they're asking for the international community to be patient? What would you tell them if you meet them?
Well, first of all, the implementation of the peace agreement has been painfully slow. As you know, the transition period was recently extended by basically 2 years, 24 months. And it continues to be a difficult and slow process. In direct response to your question, we think it's a false choice. There needs to be justice and accountability. And there needs to be real steps taken toward long-term peace and stability. But in our view, and in my view, accountability, holding those most responsible to account, is an important part of the peace process. There will not be a sustainable peace in South Sudan until those most responsible are brought to justice.
And taking them to the International Court of, the International Court in Hague.
Yes.
Could harden their positions and, you know, worst case scenario, they might not cooperate. What will happen?
That's true. You're absolutely right. It could harden their position. This is something we hear. I mean, as you said, I've been involved in international criminal justice now for more than 20 years. And that is a common thing you hear from those possibly accused, the bad actors, that says, well, if you push us too hard, things will only get worse, or we'll only show that much more resistance. So that is not something new that we're hearing for the first time now. We have to continue to press forward. Those people have got to be brought to justice. Again, it's a false choice. It's a false choice between peace and justice.
And just a last question here. Has there been any case brought against a situation like what you have in South Sudan, a polarized situation where brothers and sisters are killing each other? I mean, has there been a case like that that has been taken to Hague?
Well, of course, you have the examples of the Yugoslavia tribunals and the Rwanda tribunal. In the Rwanda tribunal, of course, that tremendous and horrific genocide was brought before the International Tribunal, Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and many people were prosecuted for that, and that also involved inter-ethnic tribal violence against one another. There's also a special court that's actually taking place in the Central African Republic. It can probably do with some improvements, but it is an example of something that can be done. And the ICC and the special court there are working together to bring people to justice. We hope the Global Rights Compliance and I and others are fighting hard and looking hard at all avenues of bringing justice to the people of South Sudan. And that's what we really are hoping for.
That's Kenneth Scott, an international human rights lawyer and former war crimes prosecutor in The Hague. He spoke with me via Skype from Denver, Colorado, on Wednesday. A new United Nations report says South Sudanese children are still subjected to violence despite some recent progress. A UN official says fighting between armed groups and intercommunal violence has taken a toll on children. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Most violations, almost 50%, were perpetrated by armed groups, but the government security forces were responsible for at least one in three grave violations. Explosive remnants of war remain the leading cause of killing and maiming of children. Continued and strengthening the mining efforts are, at this point, crucial.
That is Virginia Gamba, the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict. The United Nations' most recent report on South Sudan said overall 457 grave violations were committed against children between July 1, 2020 and June 30, 2022, with the recruitment and use of 182 children remaining the most verified grave violation, followed by killing and maiming and rape and other forms of sexual violence, which showed a sharp increase in first half of 2022. The grave violations against children include killing and maiming, recruitment of children by armed forces and armed groups, and sexual violence against children. Gamba says despite some progress, all six grave violations against children continue to be committed by all parties to conflict in South Sudan, and that even though the overall numbers are down, the systematic abuse of children continues unabated. Gamba says the situation is particularly dreadful in Unity, Central Equatoria, and Western Equatoria states.
Most violations, almost 50%, were perpetrated by armed groups, but the government security forces were responsible for at least one in three grave violations. Explosive remnants of war remain the leading cause of killing and maiming of children. Continued and strengthening the mining efforts are, at this point, crucial.
Regina Lulu, acting Undersecretary in South Sudan Gender, Child and Social Welfare Ministry, says her ministry is working with other ministries and institutions to make sure child protection laws are enforced.
We have a committee for child protection that works with the Ministry of Interior, and they also look at child trafficking, especially across the border and all that. When it comes to the health of children, Ministry of Health, when it comes to education, Ministry of Education, but we still work together with them, especially on girl child education.
Gamba urged all parties to 2020 Comprehensive Action Plan to quickly implement all of its provisions and called on groups that have not signed to the action plan to engage with the United Nations.
We really need to pay attention to the peace process. We need the peace process to be better implemented. We have to ensure its full implementation, and particularly in those provisions that relate to children.
Efforts to reach Lul Rai Kong, a spokesperson of South Sudan People Defense Force, were unsuccessful, as all of his known phone numbers were switched off. Gamba says the establishment of the necessary unified forces per the peace agreement provided the UN with opportunities to access military barracks and cantonment sites to conduct screening and to verify grave violations. For VOA News, I am Deng Aideng in Bo.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, young men and women in South Sudan say they want the government to create employment for them. Find out why after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese young men and women are complaining about lack of employment opportunities across the country. The young South Sudanese are calling on the government to create more jobs and engage young men and women across the country. South Sudan's undersecretary in the Ministry of Labor says the government is partnering with development agencies to address unemployment. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
No, 27-year-old South Sudanese Sami Mary and about 10 other young people scanned several job advertisements posted on a public notice board located at the center of the ministry's complex in Juba. Mary, who graduated with a bachelor's degree in business administration and human resource management from a Ugandan university, says she has applied for several job vacancies she found on the notice board to no avail.
So I'd been dropping papers, doing interviews, but all along in vain. So things are not working out. I'm about 4 years at home, running on the street, looking for a job. But I don't know whether they look at people's name or the jobs, like who knows who, we don't know.
Mary, a mother of three, says being unemployed in South Sudan is challenging, especially when you have three kids to put through school. James Madut, who is also looking for work in Juba, said oftentimes youth engage in negative activities in the city and rural areas because they have time on their hands.
Assume maybe I apply for 5 years here or 2 years without calling. Maybe I will go home, I will go to the village. And if I go to the village back there, maybe I will also go and meet with other people who have their own idea. Then they will take me to a different direction. Then from there, I will go to the darkness place.
By darkness places, Madut means cattle raids or intercommunal fighting, which he says are the main activities of young people in rural areas with no jobs. Madut and other jobless citizens are calling on the South Sudan government to create more economic opportunities for young people. Mary Pitia, undersecretary in the Ministry of Labor, says the government is aware of the huge number of jobless youth and it is trying to ensure that young people get the skills they need to be gainfully employed.
We are grateful also to some of our development partners like the UNDP, the African Development Bank. They have funded some of the skills for youth employability project, and through it we give skills to the youth that are needed in the market. So they get trained, they're given the skills, and immediately they go and use these skills in the labor market.
PTR says Projects funded mainly by international development partners have supported South Sudanese youth in Juba and five other states in the country to obtain vocational skills for finding work. Some young people in South Sudan say widespread nepotism in the workplace is holding them back. Pitia says the Ministry of Labor has developed strict recruitment policies to help organizations to only recruit the most qualified and not familiar faces or relatives of people already working for the government.
You know, this is human nature, and you know, to change attitudes is something that we have to work on. It will take time until things change, but we have developed some guidelines, recruitment guidelines, and we introduce instead of the applicant presenting their applications to individuals in the organization, it should be put in a box and then opened by a panel to safeguard that those actions are not taken to eliminate some people before the actual interviews.
The 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement calls for the establishment of a youth enterprise development fund with a goal of bringing more young people into economic growth and development. That fund has yet to be formed. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still in Juba, a South Sudanese youth-led organization is struggling to finish the first ever Ministerial Health Center in Juba. The head of a group called Arise Africa says most girls and young women in the country cannot afford sanitary pads due to poverty. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
Arise Africa focuses on mentoring and supporting youth in different academic endeavors. Arise Africa Executive Director Gloria Gilbert Pitia says she and other youth received funds from charities to run their program for 2 years, but they opted instead to concentrate on a long-term project that will provide a space for young women and girls.
Our target was $10,000. We raised $1,030, and SSP will raise $200. But also there is people who have pledged, there is people who have given us sewing machine for the training, and people have also donated cement. So we have like 5 cement, and there's people who donated sanitary pads. I would say that the fundraising shows a lot of commitment from South Sudanese. The fact that South Sudanese came out and supported us, you know.
Minangano Kape, a poet and author of the book Uncaging, says she is supporting the cause by donating 50% of her book sales to help reduce period poverty in South Sudan.
Being born and raised in South Sudan, I know of stories of girls who could not afford sanitary products. Others had to drop out of school just because of their period, which is such a normal thing. Period poverty also goes beyond just the ability to access sanitary product, but also access to basic information about period is very crucial.
The menstruation center will be free and accessible to all women and girls.
We're targeting not only the young girls, but also the parents, because we want to break the stigma, and we want mothers and parents to be able to talk to their kids and prepare them, you know, for this transition, because we see that this is really disrupting life of young girls.
Pitia says it will also educate mothers that menstruation is not a taboo topic, and also teach them how to make sanitary pads. Pitia says while she and other youth strive to complete the center, they will continue to visit schools in various communities of Juba to donate sanitary pads and create awareness. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shapai in Juba.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met Wednesday with top Ethiopian leaders in an effort to repair damaged ties after the brutal 2-year civil war against forces in the northern Tigray region left an estimated 500,000 people dead. deepening the peace and promoting a transitional justice policy which should seek accountability for atrocities committed by all sides in the conflict are high on the agenda. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
A traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony provided a good start to Secretary of State Antony Blinken's meetings with top government and Tigrayan leaders in Addis Ababa, with all sides eager to repair ties strained by 2 years of a grueling civil war. Blinken took a moment to reflect on the lives lost and the pain many endured.
The conflict was absolutely devastating. Hundreds of thousands killed, widespread sexual violence against women, millions forced to flee their homes, many left in need of food, shelter, medicine, hospitals, schools, businesses shelled, destroyed. The cessation of hostilities agreement is a major achievement and step forward, saving lives, changing lives. The guns are silent. As the fighting has stopped, human rights violations have declined.
Blinken said African leadership, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, and Tigrayan leaders all deserve credit for the cessation of hostilities reached in November, supported by the United States. And he brought some good news, pointing out that the U.S. is the biggest bilateral donor of aid to Ethiopia.
Today, I announced an additional $331 million in emergency food and humanitarian assistance that will reach billions of people, millions of Ethiopians affected by conflict, affected by drought.
One expert told VOA that normalizing bilateral ties after the brutal civil war will be a process and not a switch. But the United States is in a unique position to help. Joseph Siegel is director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, National Defense University. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
And I think that's where the United States has a very critical role to play as a trusted actor, as a guarantor. It can ensure that Tigrayan interests are being considered as both sides move forward. It can, you know, ensure that Ethiopian sovereignty and Ethiopian interests are also being respected.
Another expert told VOA that Abiy is eager to normalize ties and get back into a U.S. duty-free trade program, but she urged caution. Sarah Yeager is Washington director at Human Rights Watch. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
What he has been doing is downplaying the atrocities that have occurred by all warring parties, but also his own, by his own direction in places like Tigray. And so he is looking to get economic relief from the United States. He is looking to get other partners around the world interested in being donor nations, in having free trade, in bringing businesses back to Ethiopia.
Blinken said that with peace taking hold, Ethiopia is moving in the right direction and the U.S. shares its aspirations, but is not ready to welcome it back into the U.S. trade program right now. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
And that's all we prepared for you on this Thursday. We now leave you with Wenge Mambo by Oliver Mutukuzu. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bob Bass, we wish you a good evening and thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
somebody.